Unlock the power of your mind. This is Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor.
Welcome to another hour dedicated to exploring exactly what enlightenment means and what it is to be enlightened. This is an hour devoted to learning something more about ourselves, an hour designed to help us integrate all of our knowledge and perhaps even challenge some of our ideas about the world we live in and the people we have become. Indeed, an hour for the open-minded, willing to think and perhaps even risk their foregone conclusions in order to discover an entirely new dimension in their thoughts and being. I'm Eldon Taylor, and this is Provocative Enlightenment. All right, now each week I read a few of your letters as our way of respecting the importance you play in our show. Last week our show was about discovering your purpose in life, and our guest was Dr. Jean Houston. Dr. Houston basically informed us that, in her opinion, the pressures of our time are leading more and more to an urgent need to escape the serial monotony and discover their true essence and purposes in life. Rick wrote, "What a delightful breath of fresh air. Thanks, Eldon, for having Jean Houston on your show. After observing the worst in human nature being demonstrated by these clowns in Congress recently, it was nice to hear a positive message of hope." Jean wrote, "I enjoy your Hay House radio program. Today's show with Jean Houston was particularly intriguing." Glenn wrote, "What a great show and interesting guest." Kimberly wrote, "Jean Houston was a great guest. Thanks for having her. I resonated with her information and, of course, your info, too." Elaine wrote, "I found it so enlivening in the chat room the other day." You want to listen up on this one, Ravinder. "For a bit there, people were relating about other Hay House radio shows where the chat room people would not allow questioning or open discussion and insisted that whatever the topic was had to be right because the show host said so. Often my sister and I talked about provocative enlightenment and how it truly does feel very different from some of the other shows where information is shared, but the feeling of ego and kind perhaps meanness at times is in the air. Most things on Hay House are truly wonderful, but for sure Eldon is always open, fluid, and open-hearted because he sets the tone. He's never been arrogant or unkind, but still has integrity. That makes the big difference for me, us, and I just thought I'd share this." Well, wow, thanks, Elaine. We're very glad you did choose to share, and where I have disagreed with a guest in the past, I hope it has always been both honest and civil. That's quite a comment coming out of your chat room.
That is, but that expresses it totally. I think it's a great show and it's a great chat room, and we have some really good conversation and we discuss whatever it is that you're discussing on the air, so that does give a whole different quality to the show as well.
You know, I look at your chat room log after the show, and everybody in the chat room, I think, knows that. You do have remarkable experts that just drop in and visit the chat room. So it's a great chat room of great ideas and great discussions. Do join Ravinder there. Sally wrote, "I love the CD that came with a mind programming book. Great music. I'm also enjoying the book and listening to ET on HayHouseRadio.com. Well, thank you, Sally. Brom wrote, "Dear Eldon, I'm using your CD Serenity with the book Mind Programming, and I find both of them terrific. The CD is so calming and relaxing." Well, thanks, Brom. Sometimes a little extra serenity is exactly what we all need. Now, for all of you out there, if you've not obtained your copy of Mind Programming, it's on sale at Amazon and Barnes right now for about $10, and it comes with a Serenity CD free. We sell that CD for $27.95 every day of the week, so it's truly a great deal. I urge you to get your copy today. Colleen wrote, "I just finished Choices and Illusions, and I found it to be very inspiring. Thank you for all that you do." Thank you, Colleen. That's still one of my favorite books. And Gloria wrote, "I am an NLP master practitioner. I purchased your InnerTalk Weight Loss Now CD, and in just 2 days I have noticed a change in my habits. I would like to distribute this product." Well, we always have room for new distributors, Gloria, and congrats on your progress. Okay, that's all the time we're going to take for letters today, but I do invite you to opine by sending your email to Eldon, E-L-D-O-N, at EldonTaylor.com, or by joining me on Facebook. You can also just leave comments on my website. I do try to read all of your letters. Obviously, we can't get them all on the air, but they do impact our programming. I highly value your input, and I do encourage you to please provide your feedback And once again, thank you for your continued support. Now to today's show, the psychic debate. There are those that would have us believe that the world is the result of randomness, a chance happening produced out of chaos with no order, and life as we know it, nothing more than a brief episode in the history of natural evolution. As for psychic this and that, well, this is the mental fodder of immature, ignorant, and superstitious people. These same people, many of them eminent scholars in their own right, insist that the human capacity is limited to a material, mechanistic future, since humankind itself is nothing more than a meat machine. That is, consciousness is a byproduct of brain and dependent, of course, thereon. According to this view, everything is reducible to some material explanation, and only science, the brand of science often thought of as scientism, can explain the world as we know it. Religion is, as Freud once said, a sugar-coated neurotic crutch, a leftover superstition from the darker ages of witch hunts and human history. In fact, these people often like to boast that the vast majority of geniuses belonging to Mensa do not believe in God. And what's more, members of the Royal Academy of Science report that well over 90% of them do not believe in God. Now, of course, this boasting is intended to marginalize anyone that might disagree by positioning them naturally in the less bright category. So I guess I'm in the less bright category. That said, it is common to hear gross abuses of science to support religious and spiritual claims from fundamentalists and New Agers alike. I have patiently listened to both bad science and misuses of science on this show, as well as in many other venues. So it goes without saying that this could be the real miasma of the New Age. Now, by contrast, and what the pseudo-skeptics do not say, there are many hard scientists that totally differ from their views. Many hard scientists find the world magical and dependent on some level of consciousness that would appear to arise and interact outside or independent of the brain. That is, this form of consciousness exchanges intelligence with the universe, with matter, creating in some ways what we call our world. Here are a couple examples of what I mean. Roger Jones, physicist and entrepreneur, said, quote, "I had come to suspect and now felt compelled to acknowledge that science and the physical world were products of human imagining, and that we were not the cool observers of that world, but its passionate creators. We were all poets, and the world was our metaphor." Close quote. Theoretical physicist John Wheeler said, quote, "Useful as it is under everyday circumstances to say that the world exists out there, independent of us, that view can no longer be upheld." Close quote. Werner Heisenberg, considered to be the father of quantum physics, demonstrated that the real state of any physical event is brought forth through the act of observation. We know this as the uncertainty principle. Erwin Schrödinger, one of the fathers of quantum mechanics, claimed that the world consists of units or elements of consciousness. Now, naysayers look at this info and argue that any observation is okay. It does not take a human observation for this act of materializing in the physical world to be true. They assert that a camera can be the observer. I ask, is that question begging? Does it require a human to create the camera, position it, and then view the results? In other words, does this supposed act by the camera of observation depend upon a human agent? Is this a circular argument? So what does all this mean? How does it translate when we investigate the world of the so-called supernatural? Is psychic experience explainable through the lens of quantum physics? If consciousness interacts with the universe to create matter, does this necessitate a worldview of consciousness as existing independent of the brain? Or is there a more mechanistic explanation? the brain is just sending out some sort of electrical signal, and when the brain dies, well, the signal ends, and so does consciousness. All right. Our guest today is legendary and genuinely one of those authentic pioneers I refer to as iconic. I simply love how his mind works. I love his books. I love his, Professor Stanley Krippner is internationally known for his pioneering work in the scientific investigation of human consciousness, especially such areas as creativity, parapsychology, and altered states of consciousness. Prior to joining the Saybrook faculty in 1972, Dr. Krippner directed the Dream Laboratory at Mamedy's Medical Center in New York and was director of the Child Study Center at Kent State University. He has served as president of the Association for Humanistic Psychology, and he is a fellow in the American Psychological Association. Professor Krippner received his Ph.D. in educational psychology from Northwestern University. He has written over 500 articles and several books, including his editor, Debating Psychic Experience, Human Potential or Human Illusion, the subject of today's show. Professor Krippner's diverse academic interests include clinical, educational, and health issues. At Saybrook, he is responsible for developing and teaching courses in the areas of consciousness studies. Welcome to Provocative Enlightenment, Professor Stanley Krippner.
Well, thank you very much for such a gracious introduction.
Well, you deserve it and more. You genuinely have been a man that has been iconic to me, and I mean that in the most sincere of ways. But let's begin by starting from the beginning. How and why did you become interested in the paranormal?
First of all, I don't like the word paranormal. I don't like the word supernatural. I think all of these phenomena are normal and natural. I think the universe is made out of one piece, and those are two terms that I never use myself in my dialogue or in my writing. And I think that gives you a clue to my perspective on what we're going to talk about.
It's true. What terms do you prefer?
I use the term psi, which is a term that refers to phenomena that, if verified, transcend mainstream science's understanding of space, time, and energy. In other words, they're anomalies. They don't fit into what mainstream science holds to be the stuff of the universe. However, there are always exceptions in mainstream science, and you have identified many of them, especially from the field of quantum physics, where such experiences as telepathy and clairvoyance and remote perception fit right into what they see as the fabric of the universe. Now, we could also use the word parapsychological phenomena. We could use the word psychical phenomena. But those are much better words than paranormal, because that is too close to abnormal, and there's nothing abnormal about these experiences. And it's much better than the word supernatural, because that implies that there is a divine agency responsible for these phenomena. And I don't think that we need to posit any divine agency at all. I think this is just the way the world works. This is part of the fabric of reality.
It reminds me of Edgar Mitchell's statement that there is no such thing as supernatural, just very large gaps in that which we understand to be normal or natural.
Yes, these are gaps, and parapsychologists and their friends are trying to fill in these gaps so that we have a better understanding of the universe in which we live and exist.
So my next question to you is going to be a very straight up and yet somewhat naive question, especially after reading Debating Psychic Experience. But it was going to be, what is your belief? Is it human potential or human illusion? But I think you've answered that. You're going to say that this is this is very real. It is a natural state. We may not totally yet understand it, but I assume that this is a human potential. Is that true?
Yes, it is. Again, I don't use the word belief because I don't really believe in much of anything. I accept evidence when I think that the evidence is strong. I reject something when I think the evidence is weak. But sometimes these phenomena are illusory. A person who is severely mentally ill can hear voices, can think that God is telling him or her to murder somebody or to kill a certain group of people. And in this case, it's not only an illusion, it's a very, very dangerous illusion. And I think such aspects of psychology as transpersonal psychology have gone very far in helping us discriminate when psychic experiences are a potential and when so-called psychic experiences are an illusion. And in the latter, they can be very, very dangerous. So we have to be very careful in making judgments and making discriminations.
One of the, you know, well, I'm going to get ahead of myself if I do that. So instead, you heard the setup piece. What are your thoughts on some of the uses and abuses of science to justify a belief in special forms of consciousness, or for that matter, the world of psi?
I think that the advantage of science is that it's the only belief system around these days that is self-corrective. It will make corrections based on new data. Most religions do not do this. They think that they have the revealed truth for all time, all places, and that is something that gets them into a lot of trouble when they conflict with religions that have a contrary dogmatic point of view. But science is able to make changes based on new data. It is self-corrective. Now, you mentioned the word scientism a while back. Scientism is very much like dogmatic religions because the people who we might call advocates of scientism say, well, we have all the answers and nothing that falls outside of the line that we've drawn around the quote truth unquote is worthy of serious investigation. So for them, all of these topics we're talking about are illusory. Somebody comes in with a dream about a child who was in danger the exact moment of the dream, made a phone call and saved the child's life. Well, a person who advocates scientism would say, oh, that's a coincidence, or that's a false report. They would find some excuse to reject that experience without taking a very close look at it. Now, if the person had written down the dream and if the time that the child was in danger coincided with the time that the person had the dream, that is a pretty close match. That seems to me to be really pushing the boundaries of coincidence.
Yeah, I totally concur with that. And you remind me when you mention scientism in that light, I'm not interested in the facts of what something Rupert Sheldrake recently told me, and that was in a debate he had with Richard Dawkins, televised in the UK. He asked Dawkins if he was familiar with the latest random number generator research, and Dawkins told him no, but it wouldn't make any difference whatsoever anyway.
Well, there's a good example, because Sheldrake is a good friend of mine, very, very bright, and I'm sure that Dawkins has not taken the time to investigate the random event generator data, but what he says is very revealing. Even if I did examine it, and even if I did look at the evidence, it wouldn't make any difference. Now, that's very close-minded.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I have to say that I really admire much of what Dawkins has written, because he is pointing out where fundamentalist religions have gotten the world into a great deal of trouble. But Dawkins doesn't realize that he has a lot in common with these fundamentalist religions. Yes, the fundamentalist religions have their minds closed and will not admit any point of view other than their own, but the same can be said of Dawkins. and he doesn't see that he really shares some of the attributes of the fundamentalists that he is attacking in the religious theory.
That's correct. Perhaps they have the same underlying psychological motive, but that's another discussion. You mentioned in your answer earlier the comparison of the dream, and then, of course, you know, we have the accident, and so we naturally associate that cause and effect. There's a strong notion of attribution, and we're both aware of what attribution error is. And it's, you know, this attribution process is often, in my view, the spark plug behind keeping psi research alive. And if you do look at the literature, I think one of the fair criticisms is that the entire area of psi research hasn't exactly progressed too awful much since, you know, William James and Rhine, for maybe the last 100 years at least, as compared to other scientific disciplines. And still, people, including myself, from all walks of life, continue to have experiences that are not explainable given our current scientific model of the world. Now, I'm fully aware of the attribution error. Indeed, my favorite example of one goes like this. On Monday, I drank scotch and water and woke Tuesday with a headache. So on Tuesday evening, I drank bourbon and water, and again, I woke with a headache. So on Wednesday, I drank vodka and water, and when I woke on Thursday, I knew what was causing the headaches. Well, of course, it was the common denominator, water. Still, seeing a ghost, knowing who's on the phone before you answer it, witnessing a miracle healing, you know, discovering that dogs really do know when their owners are starting home and so forth, you know, all brings this back. So, I mean, do you believe that these anomalous experiences are what continue to drive psi research?
Well, these anomalous experiences can certainly be investigated. They serve as fodder for a more serious investigation. There's a very important difference between an experience, which is very subjective, and event, which is very objective. An event is something that is recorded, that many people have witnessed or studied, and that has been replicated in other times and in other places. An experience is very subjective. One person might report an experience, but that doesn't mean that it is valid, that it is veridical, that it is an event. So that's why in our book, Debating Psychic Experience, we use the word experience, because the debate is whether a psychic experience is a potential that is part of humanity's legacy or an illusion which we're better off without. And the book has a very lively debate between some of the outstanding proponents of parapsychological data and some of the most knowledgeable opponents or counter-advocates of what parapsychology says that it's found out.
Indeed. You know, I just as a plug for that book, that the book is, in my opinion, the best on the subject that I've ever read. For a balanced perspective of what the state of the art are, what the questions, et cetera, and so forth. We have a hard break coming up. When we come back from the break, I'd like to know, you know, pursue this a little bit further. I'd like to know, Professor, if you personally have had a psychic experience, all right? All right, you're listening to Provocative Enlightenment. We're discussing psychic experience and human potential with Professor Stanley Krippner. If you're not already in our chat room, now's the time to join us and take in the film. Just go to eldentaylor.com/chat. Stay with us during the break. You won't want to miss what's coming up in the next half of the hour. Following these messages from our...
Eldon's international best-selling book, Mind Programming, is a must-read if you wish to live awake in a world of sheeples. Film producer Jeff Warwick had this to say about mind programming. Dr. Eldon Taylor's new book is a must-read. If you've ever questioned your purpose in life or felt bound by a culture that's driven by mass media, you now have at your fingertips the knowledge and tools to break the chains of this cycle. Eldon goes in-depth to illustrate and expose how we've been programmed from birth by social constraints, and he methodically reveals the psychological techniques that advertisers, politicians, corporations, and the media use to control us. He then provides strategies and solutions to free your mind from these tactics and rise to a new level of consciousness. As you read this book, you'll feel the blinders being removed and will truly see the world in an entirely new light. Get your copy today online or at fine bookstores everywhere.
Every day, every moment, we face choices. Yet, how many of those choices are truly our own? Are you ready to step onto the path of discovery? Read Eldon Taylor's New York Times bestseller, Choices and Illusions, now revised, updated, and expanded. Eldon combines provocative information, scientific research, and his own life's journey into a powerful message that we have the power to change. All we must do is be willing to choose to take the chance and change. Get your copy today from all bookstores.
Unlock the power of your mind. This is Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor.
Welcome back. If you just joined us, we're discussing psychic experiences and the human potential with Professor Stanley Krippner. But before we get back to today's show, I want to invite you to like our Facebook fan page for Provocative Enlightenment Radio. As a fan of the show, you'll receive special announcements and incentives from time to time as our way of thanking you for your support. I would also like to invite you to join me on Facebook while you're there, and of course you can follow me on Twitter. If you like our show, do spread the word. We genuinely appreciate your support. All right, let's get back to the show. Before the break, we were discussing psychic experiences, and I suggested that perhaps a driving force propelling psi research had to do with personal experiences. And Professor Krippner was quick to point out the difference between a personal experience and an incident that can be measured, looked at scientifically. However, my question, I think, still went unanswered. Professor Krippner, have you had a psi experience yourself?
Yes, I have had a psi experience. Not very many of them. I can't claim that they're psi events because they might have been coincidental, but I was very close to a Native American woman by the name of Spotted Fawn, and when I was in Mexico, I had a dream in which her husband, Rolling Thunder, was driving in his van out of San Francisco back to their home in Nevada. And I said, Rolling Thunder, where is Spotted Fawn? And he turned his head to the back of the van, and I saw a coffin. And I woke up. Of course, I was very sad. I recorded the dream. And then in the morning, I was awakened with a voice that sounded like Spotted Fawn's voice saying, I will not be seeing you on this earth again. I have come to say goodbye. So there you have two psychic experiences. Now, on the other hand, before I left for Mexico, I had visited Spotted Fawn in a hospital in San Francisco, and I knew that she had terminal cancer. So the juxtaposition of the dreams with her death could have been coincidental. However, they did occur the very, very same night that she died. So there was a correspondence in terms of the timing. But you see, these psychic experiences can produce experiments. As you know, for many years, I did some experiments at Maimonides Medical Center in which we had people in one part of the building try to send an image, usually an art print by a famous artist, to a dreamer in a laboratory in a soundproof room. And then we had a team of neutral judges try to match up the dreams with the pictures, and they were able to do this at better than chance levels. So there you can see how a psychic experience can lead into an experiment that is worthy of publication and that tends to verify the reality of psychic communication during dreams. We can't really quite call it an event because the people who tried to replicate our studies sometimes were successful, sometimes they were not. So the chapter is still unwritten in terms of how close we are to cinching the argument about telepathic dreams. But right. at least we got off to a good start.
Right. You know, within myself, Professor Krippner, I recognize a vulnerability when it comes to this subject. I like to be very linear, very logical, and I think of myself as a scientist. And yet, because I have had personal experiences of the kind you're talking about, I know that I am predisposed to want to believe. And that becomes one of the criticisms of parapsychology, the entire field of psi research. A lot of those people who would say, and I'll use words from your book, Debating Psychic Experience, that the whole field is not ready for prime time, would essentially argue that, there isn't an underlying theory, a basic theory that is a cohesive theory. Theory that supports parapsychology and as a result of that, you know, psi experiments are often like yours, where they're not replicated, they're often excused away by experimenters as, you know, on the basis of this is a psi experimenter effect, or this is a psi missing effect, or this is the decline effect, or the sheep goat effect, and so on and so forth. Well, in fact, I probably should ask you, please explain those so-called effects and flesh out this problem of bias for us, would you? Yeah, the problem, you know, the problem that I have is I'm naturally biased. And because I'm naturally biased, you know, I might be looking, as many psi experimenters do, at a rationalization for why there's a failure to replicate. Or why the effect seems to diminish over time. And you know, and we're all familiar with, you know, one explanation that we hear over and over again goes like this. Well, you have to believe. If you're not a believer, well, then you're not going to get these results. So I guess what I mean, this is a problem as I see it. Is it a problem in the field of psi research as you see it?
Well, of course it's a problem, because if somebody has a bias, they might overlook flaws in an experiment, or they might interpret the data in ways that a more unbiased experimenter would not interpret the data. But this is not 100% true across the boards. Take the field of psychic healing. When you take a look at the healing shrines around the world and the attempts of psychic healers to work with people who are sick, I personally know of some people who are totally unbelievers, and they got well anyway. And I know of some people who are very, very devout, who are completely convinced that they would be healed. Nothing happened, and a few weeks later they were dead. And so bias is only one of many, many variables that comes into the picture. It's an important variable, and it leads to what we call the experimenter effect. A number of years ago, a parapsychologist by the name of Gertrude Schmeidler examined videotapes of experimenters doing parapsychological experiments. And she found that the experimenter who was doing the experiment could be differentiated from unsuccessful experimenters equally strong in their convictions on the basis of body language. So sometimes the bias is unconscious rather than conscious. Also, there is an experiment involving artistically inclined subjects in the so-called Ganzfeld effect, where people try to get an image by looking at ping pong balls that are cut in two while a series of pictures is being shown in a distant room. And one of the experimenters, Marilyn Schlitz, who was very much committed to the parapsychological hypothesis, got significant results, while another experimenter using the very, very same procedure, Richard Wiseman, who was very much an opponent of the parapsychological hypothesis, got purely chance results. So, in any event, I think that this is why it's necessary to have replications done by people with different points of view, because even though the experiment itself might be well controlled, there are hidden agendas, there are biases that might influence the results one way or the other. And the only way that we can correct for this is to have a variety of people do the experiments. Now, this is more easily said than done because there is very, very little money available for parapsychological experiments. And people come to me all the time and say, I want to be tested. And I say, fine, you put up $10,000 and I will find a laboratory to test you. And they say, well, aren't people interested in finding out about these phenomena? I say, yes, but who's going to give them the money? This is not part of mainstream science. Any solid foundation would be ridiculed for giving money for a parapsychological experiment. The money comes from people who are interested in the topic, who happen to have enough money to donate, and many of them sort of give up after a few years when nothing substantial or replicable comes out of their money. So funding, I think, is the critical issue in parapsychology. Funding could lead to the theories that we talked about that would be explanatory. They could lead to the replications that are so necessary, and they could also lead to the design of innovative research. I think that one of the most intriguing pieces of research is the Global Consciousness Project that Roger Nelson has been carrying on for many, many years, where he has the random event generators that flip on a red light or a green light randomly, and he has them all over the world. And they just go on their merry way flipping the red and green lights on randomly. But then when there is a very, very dramatic event like the World Cup or the death of Princess Diana, these random event generators start to synchronize. They all start to do the same thing. It's as if they're picking up on the emotion, whether negative or positive, associated with that happy or sad event, and they galvanize as if there is a global consciousness of some sort. Now, I have yet to see a worthwhile critical analysis of this experiment. The only thing that I would suggest is that this experiment is fairly inexpensive to do, and a group of people who are neutral or negative about parapsychology could set up their own network and see if they get the same results.
Yeah, the data there, I believe, is quite robust at this moment. But when you're mentioning, you know, the monetary aspect of the research, you know, you point out in your book, Debating Psychic Experience, which, again, I'm going to recommend to everybody that's listening to this show, that, you know, there is an economic side to that. Pear filed a patent a couple of years ago. Well, if you did more than that now. But there's also been a recent trickle of new patent applications for psi-related uses. So there seems to be more interest suddenly in some aspects of psi anyway, but funding is a major issue. Now, Ray Hyman makes a good case in your book for the absence of a clear theory to psi. So, I mean, it's an excellent case. So do you have a theory yourself for psi? And if you do, will you share it with us, Professor?
I think that the Ray Hyman chapter in our book, Debating Psychic Experiences, is a very strong chapter, and he points out that if there were a overarching theory that could provide an explanatory basis for these anomalous data, this would go far toward legitimizing the field. Now, I don't have a brilliant resolution of this. There are a lot of interesting theories around, and people can find a whole chapter on theories in my book series, Advances in Parapsychological Research, I think in volume number 3, and this is available on Amazon.com. So there's no end of theories. The problem is the theories require money to be tested, and the theories that are most popular today are those that get into the field of quantum physics and quantum mechanics and deal with what is called the observational effect, where once people observe something, it comes into being. Mm-hmm. And this has a philosophical girding to it, that people are the co-creators of the universe in terms of a field of consciousness. David Bohm, the famous physicist, said that there are actually two sides to reality. There is the explicit reality, the everyday reality that everybody is aware of and where most scientific experiments are done, and the implicit reality, the hidden reality in which time and space are quite different than they are in ordinary reality, and where people and other organisms are linked, that there are group minds, collective consciousness, that link people at a very, very deep level. Now, we have yet to plumb the implications of this and to design experiments that take the implicit reality into account. Most of our experiments are done on the basis of explicit reality, ordinary reality. And that's not where the action is, according to David Bohm. So there's no wonder that we're having trouble getting replications.
Right. Bohm won the Nobel Prize for his holographic universe ideas.
Yeah, he didn't
ideas,
win the Nobel Prize. So he didn't win a Nobel Prize. He deserved one, but he didn't quite get it.
He didn't get it. I thought he did.
No, he got a number of prizes, but Bohm never won the Nobel Prize.
All right. Well, I stand corrected. I will certainly pass to your power. Check that later. You made a comparison of eyewitness reports in a Brazilian medium case. And one of the criticisms that is directed often at psi researchers has to do with these personal experiences and how we can easily color them and how you can go away from your psychic and you're all excited and tell everybody that, of course, you know, hey, he got everything right. But if you listen to the recording later, well, you hear lots of things that were, you know, how they questioned they were actually, you know, cold reading and so on and so forth. Now, I'm not surprised that there would be differences in reports given by witnesses to these things, because for years I ran lie detection tests, interrogations, and supervised investigations, and people that are witnesses to crime. You know, you can have three people in a 7-Eleven under an armed robbery, and they'll all see the same perpetrator, and they'll give you three descriptions that range from 6'6" and huge to 5'5" and tiny. So what did you find when you were doing this research, and what did you go away with as a result? How does high witness testimony relate to good psi research?
Eyewitness testimony is very, very suspect, and that is why it's very helpful to have several people give their account of something that seems parapsychological or anomalous in nature, because what one person sees, another person might not see. And it's very important that you have people who are extremely skeptical balance out the people who are extremely gullible or at least sympathetic to the parapsychological hypothesis. However, one of the Brazilian psychics who has made news recently is a healer by the name of John of God, and we did have the chance to go to his healing center and got permission to take tissue samples from the people who he operated on with very primitive surgical instruments. And the people who are extremely critical of John of God say, oh, he's just using sleight of hand. He's not really cutting into the body. This is just chicken intestines that he's pulling out. Well, we did these biopsies with 10 people, and believe it or not, all 10 people produced tissue samples after the surgery that matched the blood type and that matched other characteristics of the person who was being operated on. So we know that he was performing a legitimate operation. But that's not all. He is supposed to be removing diseased tissue. In 9 out of 10 cases, the tissue he removed was absolutely healthy. Yet the people got well anyway.
Interesting.
Either they got well, they got better, or they didn't change, but nobody got worse. Now, John of God says, you know, the operation is not really necessary. I can do a physical operation or I can do a spiritual operation. Well, he's got a good point there, because the physical operation does not take out the diseased tissue, but it gets that old placebo effect to kick in, and the people's self-healing mechanisms start to operate and cleanse the body, purify the body, promote healthy growth. The immune system kicks in. The various self-healing properties and self-regulation properties kick in, and sometimes very, very quickly. So by studying these cases of psychic healing, and when they are successful and when they're not successful, I think we might find a way where people really don't have to go to a healer. They can use the self-regulation, the self-hypnosis, the diet, the exercise, the lifestyle changes that will assist their own healing. And the belief that is necessary and the spiritual aspect that's necessary is something that they can find within themselves. They don't have to depend upon an outside person. If they have their own self-esteem, if they have their own faith, if they have their own connection to the cosmos that provides spiritual guidance for them.
Yeah, that is very interesting. I had an opportunity to visit John of God this year, and because of other commitments, I was unable to do that. But I have a couple of friends, including a surgeon from Hilo, that will be down there examining firsthand. I was unaware of this tissue matter. We have about 30 seconds.
I should say that's published. Everything I'm talking to you about is published in a book or a journal somewhere.
What is okay, well, we'll find it later. We're out of time, Dr. Krippner. I would like our listening audience, however, to know your website, your books are, of course, at Amazon. I can give you like 30 seconds. Tell everybody how to reach out to you.
www.stanleykrippner, one word, weebly.com. That is the website where many of these articles appear. Go to Amazon.com, and you can buy Debating Psychic Experience.
And the other book you mentioned quickly, Dr. Krippner?
Advances in Parapsychological Research, also available at Amazon.com and other bookstore orders.
And great books, truly great books. Again, I very much appreciate you taking the time to come to the show. We could spend another couple of hours. Perhaps one day we'll get you back and we'll do it again. But we've come to the end of another hour of Provocative Enlightenment, and I want to thank you all for listening in, and I hope that you'll join us again next week, same time and same place. And if you have comments on our show, do let us all know. Okay, until next time, remember, believing in yourself always matters.